Welcome to the podcast, everyone. So we're going to continue our journey with the beautiful Bhagavatam, and it's an ancient yogic text that really tells the stories of Krishna and Vishnu and the incarnations of that particular deity. And now what we're doing is we're looking at chapter 28 of the third canto. And this is where Kapila is teaching to his mother, and he's her guru, and he's teaching her the system of yoga. And you know, when I say yoga, I don't mean that in a generic word, generic sense. I mean that it's like he's teaching her classical yoga, like from the Yoga Sutras. So, chapter 28. Kapila said, "Dear mother, O daughter of the king, now I shall explain to you the system of yoga, the object of which is to concentrate the mind. By practicing the system, one can become joyful and progressively advance towards the path of absolute truth." So he straight up gives it to her. He goes, "Here, now I shall describe to you the system of yoga. If you go to the Yoga Sutras, 1.1, it literally says that, Atha Yoga Nusasanam, which is now the yoga can begin. And then 1.2 is Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. So then you have yoga is the calming of the fluctuating mind. So you have that here. It's pretty amazing that it's the same thing. Now I shall explain to you the system of yoga, the object of which is to concentrate the mind. By practicing this system, one can become joyful and progress towards, or advance towards the path of absolute truth." So 1.3 in the Yoga Sutra says that once you calm the mind down, that's 1.2. So once you do that, then the seer can abide in its own true nature. So you can abide in your own true nature, which is Sat Chit Ananda, which is eternally blissful. So in this way, it's like this is 1.1, 1.2, and 1.3 all in one. Pretty cool. Back to the book. One should execute his or her prescribed duties to the best of their ability and avoid performing duties which are not allotted to him or her. One should be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord, and one should worship the feet of the guru. So this is a traditional Indian concept of the guru-student relationship that sometimes is kind of viewed as almost offensive in our culture. But let's look at the first part of it. One should execute his prescribed duties. So the word there, the duties, is dharma. So you'll hear the word dharma a lot. Dharma is like your path, like what you're meant to do. And the root word is dri, which means to carry. So it's like something you carry with you. And that could be a lot of different things. You could have a natural propensity to teach people things. And some people are just very very easeful with teaching or speaking in public and disseminating information, and other people are not. They're, you might be more artistic in nature. Somebody else may be drawn to cooking or whatever it is. But it gives you a sense of, you have a sense of joy and a sense of ease when you do it. One should prescribe their prescribed duties to the best of their ability and avoid performing duties which are not allotted to them. If you ever meet somebody who hates their job, like despises their job, and it makes them kind of a miserable person, that's where you're kind of like off the dharmic path in a way. One should be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord. That's beautiful. I mean, it's kind of like surrendering to, hey, I'm not going to obsess over that I'm not a billionaire. You know, I'm gonna be happy with what I get. And if I get that, that's great. I'll do things of service and I'll, you know, be able to help people out in a great way. But if I don't, I'll find another way to do that and fulfill myself. Maybe not monetarily, but maybe in a sense of service. One should cease performing conventional religious practices and should be attracted to those which lead to salvation. One should eat very frugally and always remain secluded so that he can achieve the highest state of perfection of life. So this talks about kind of being secluded. And this is where I feel like some people miss the Yoga Sutras, or they miss the mark with them. They don't understand a very basic tenet that the Yoga Sutras were meant for people who were renunciating or going to renunciate, and not people in the household or stage of life. So then when the Yoga Sutras talks about things like brahmacharya, which is celibacy, then all of a sudden people have to rework that definition of celibacy to mean something else. Oh, no, it means this or it means that. And meanwhile, it's very clear that when they say brahmacharya, they mean brahmacharya, which is celibacy, which isn't a big deal for somebody who's taking on a monastic role or somebody who's taken on a role of withdrawing from society and focusing more inward. So here you see, he kind of touches on that. One should cease performing conventional religious practices and should be attracted to those practices that will lead to salvation. One should eat very frugally, meaning you'll eat very small, and should always remain secluded so that he can achieve the highest perfection of life. So when he mentioned cease performing religious practices, so conventional dharma basically means, that's the Sanskrit. The Sanskrit is gramya dharma, which is conventional dharma, religious practices. And then you're ceasing to practice that. So in a way, it's where our culture goes, where people go, oh, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, because the dogma of religion. So making your spirituality really your own and making that connection really deep. I'm thinking that's where he's going with this. Back to the book. One should practice nonviolence, truthfulness, should avoid thieving, and be satisfied with possessing as much as he needs for maintenance. He should abstain from sex life, brahmacharya. Austerity, be clean, study the Vedas, and worship the Supreme Form of the Lord. So here we have yama and niyama pretty much just laid out for us. If you're familiar with the Yoga Sutras, it breaks down the eight limbs of yoga. Yama and niyama being the first, and those are like kind of like the observances. And kind of like, hey, you don't want to do this. And they list like 10. And they're pretty much laid out here for us. Ahimsa being the first one, same in the Yoga Sutras of the yamas. One difference here is that instead of aparigraha, which is in the Yoga Sutras, aparigraha, the negates it. So non-grasping, graha, like grasping, aparigraha. That's what you have in the Yoga Sutras. So here, it's a little different. You have Yavat Atar. Oh, I'm sorry. Yavat Ata Artha. Yavat Artha Parigraha. Yavat Artha Parigraha. So you have as much as necessary possessing. I think that's like a nuanced position from the Yoga Sutras. Because it's kind of silly to think that I'm not going to be able to be here without kind of grasping towards something, whether it's shelter or water or food or, you know, it's very challenging to think that I'm not going to attach to anything or people, right? So here, that's why I think it's nuanced, is because it's saying, I'm just going to take as much as I need for my maintenance. It's beautiful. And again, this is not necessarily for the householder, for somebody in the grihastha, that's householder stage of life, where you're in the world, you got a job, you got stuff to do, right? It's not going to be like, I'm going to be able to do all these things the way they're describing. What's interesting is that this may be a place where we can get to in our life, or there might be a stage in our life where we feel that, you know, this is something I want to do. I want to explore this path of life. Maybe it's older, you know, when you're a little older, which is a little different than us. We, in our culture, we tend to retire to Florida on a golf course. And that's our later years. It's like the Golden Girls, you know. They moved to Florida and they were all there in the house together, living life. But in this way, it could be a little different, where you could say, you know what, when I hit this age, I'm going to move away from society. I'm going to be a little more secluded. I'm going to work on my spiritual practice. That's a very admirable thing, and a choice you can make. I'm just looking at the purport here, which is the description written by Prabhupada. He says, a brahmachari, the practice of celibacy, controlling his sex life. One cannot enjoy unrestricted sex life and practice yoga. This is rascaldom. I underlined that word, rascaldom. I think it's funny. Back to the book. One should observe silence, acquire steadiness by practicing different yogic postures, control breathing of the vital air, withdraw the senses from sense objects, and thus concentrate the mind on the heart. That's great. And again, it's mirroring the Yoga Sutras, like almost, you know, to the T. Back to the book. Fixing the air and the mind in one of the six circles of vital air circulating within the body, thus concentrating one's mind on the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This is called samadhi of mind. So here he says, Vaikuntha Lila. Beautiful. Vaikuntha Lila. Dhyana, which is basically like dhyana is concentration. So there you have dhyana. It's right in the Sanskrit. You have dharana and then dhyana. Beautiful. So manas prana dharanam, which is Vaikuntha Lila Yanam. So it's like this beautiful way of understanding dharana, fixing the mind on the pastimes of the Lord. Beautiful. Back to the book. After controlling one's mind and sitting postures, one should keep a seat in a secluded and sanctified place Sit in an easy posture, keeping the body erect and controlling the breath. Beautiful, right? I mean, we could practice that in our own life. Have a spot in your house that you are dedicate towards meditation and sitting and just being with yourself. The yogi should be clear. The yogi should clear the passage of vital air by breathing in the following manner. First, he should inhale very deeply. Then, hold the breath in. Finally, exhale. Reversing this process, the yogi can first exhale, then hold the breath outside, and finally inhale. This is done so that the mind may become steady and free from external disturbances. So I've heard people describe this as box breathing, but it's really kumbhaka breathing. And my mouth always wants to say kombucha, but kumbhaka breath. And you see the word kumbhaka is here in the Sanskrit. So it's literally telling us that that's the type of breathing we want to do. There's a lot of science out here now on this, of how this stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the part of the nervous system that helps calm us down. So you have fight, flight, and now you have, with the polyvagal theory, freeze. So the mind could freeze as well. So you can fight, and you can go after it. You can flight, meaning you'd run away. Or you might freeze, kind of like a deer. I was in Robert Moses, and I was walking on the path by the lighthouse, and there was a deer off the path, but, you know, probably about 6 feet away from me. But boom, it just froze. You know, fight, flight, or freeze. So that was freezing. So anyway, when you do this kumbhaka breathing, what you're doing is turning on your parasympathetic nervous system, which is going to help calm you down. And we live in a perpetual state of anxiety, partly because of our phones, I think, don't help the situation, because we're continually looking at our phones and we're seeing what other people are doing, and people are passive-aggressively posting things about, you know, an issue they had, and, you know, all these things that can turn on our sympathetic nervous system, like fight or flight, or our fight part, right, or flight part. And we need things in our wheelhouse that are going to help us learn to calm that system down. And this, what they're talking about in the Bhagavatam, this, we could follow this to the T of this kumbhaka breathing. And we would learn to make those connections. So I love when the tradition matches up with the science. Back to the book. The yogi who practices such breathing exercises are very soon freed from mental disturbances, such as gold when put to the fire and fanned becomes free from impurities. That's great. So I'm going to stop there, and I'll pick it up again tomorrow. See you guys soon. Bye.